All right, everybody, if I could have your attention, I think we're going to get to the Q&A portion of the evening. Also, you guys are awesome at asking questions. We got like 100, and that's not an exaggeration. 100 questions here tonight from this audience, and that is awesome. I will say, since I assume some of you want to go home this evening, we are not going to answer each and every one of those questions, and some of them are pretty similar as well. But Lee did mention, and it's important for you guys to know as well, these questions are super important for us to keep in mind when we're looking at future reporting on this issue. So you might start to see some web postings or reporting around some of your questions that maybe we're unable to answer here tonight, but it really takes us in the right direction, which is exactly what News and Brews is really all about. This idea of community input, seeing where your minds are at and seeing where our reporting should go. So thank you so much for everybody who submitted a question tonight. In fact, our very first question that we're going to be handling, it is important to note that Madeline Beck of Illinois Newsroom is already working on a story. We hope to have this posted by Monday. But how will we moderate criminal use of marijuana, such as driving while intoxicated? So I don't know if anybody on the panel wants to take that, but again, we will be having a web story coming out on Monday from Illinois Newsroom about this very topic in question.
I can at least attempt to address that. I've just been frantically looking up studies on how do we measure levels of intoxication from THC, which is the intoxicating component of marijuana. Is my mic on? Okay. So basically, there is no easy way to assess a person's state of intoxication with like a blood test. And according to a researcher on a study that was just published earlier this year, it's not that we need more research. We already know that you can't actually, there's no one blood or oral fluid concentration that can differentiate between impaired or not being impaired. And part of the problem is that the blood alcohol level of THC doesn't necessarily correlate with being high. Like, it can get cleared out of your system, but you can still be high for several more hours. So this is a legitimate concern that's been raised. You legalize marijuana, people smoke or take it, and then how will we be able to measure if they are driving while intoxicated? And the answer is we don't have a way of doing that as of right now.
So I'll be interested to see where Madeline Beck takes her reporting. Again, that will be coming out next
week. And I believe
week.
If you've texted us, we have a way to contact those people, right, Kristen, to keep you posted with answers to these questions as we continue to report on it. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and we'll get more information about that here in just a minute. So, Lee, I believe you said you could answer this next one. Will Illinois potentially make CBD only available if it has THC in it? Which you might have to explain the difference between the two first,
okay,
and then answer the question.
I was excited when I saw this question because a year or so, like before I started my job here, I covered this topic I mentioned for the Chicago Reader, and something I noticed in Chicago was that going into health food stores, going into grocery stores, I started seeing all these CBD products, and I was like, what is this? Because I had at that point been to a medical marijuana cultivation facility, which is like, it was like the Area 51 of pot. It was the most like regulated place I'd ever been in. I had to wear like what amounted to a hazmat suit. It was crazy. So I was like, how is this like not in a dispensary? What's going on? And the reason I started asking that question is because CBD is the primary non-psychoactive ingredient in cannabis.
It's not non-psychoactive. It's the non-intoxicating, right?
No, it's not psychoactive.
Okay.
So it's the primary non-psychoactive ingredient. So that means you're not getting intoxicated from it. So THC is psychoactive. So you're having like, you know, you're having the high effect. THC is what causes that. CBD does not cause that. But CBD might have these other benefits. We don't really know because the research isn't really out there yet. But a lot of people will tell you anecdotally that they use it for sleep. They use it for, you know, almost like an ibuprofen, like reducing inflammation and things like that. So the reason that you see that at a place like Common Ground, for example, is because the CBD that is sold in stores on the shelves is derived from hemp. And while we have been talking about marijuana legalization, I also want to mention right now that hemp has become increasingly legalized in many states across the country, due in part to Mitch McConnell's advocacy around it. He seems like an unlikely guy to do this, but he wanted a replacement for the tobacco crop in Kentucky, and he saw hemp as his opportunity. So, yeah, it's included in the farm bill. And actually, there's like a carve out in there that prevents the federal government from using federal money to go after hemp producers or the sale of hemp across state lines. So the DEA actually considers CBD like a Schedule I drug, but their hands are essentially tied in terms of going after CBD that's derived from hemp. So hemp and marijuana are both cannabis sativa. Hemp has more CBD. Marijuana typically has more THC. So you're not going to like get high if you smoke hemp, basically. But they have been using hemp to get CBD out of it. And it's this new burgeoning, budding industry. So again, the CBD that you see on shelves in the stores, that comes from hemp, not from marijuana. There are in dispensaries like CBD that does come out of marijuana, but oftentimes there's THC in there as well. And I've talked to some marijuana industry folks who say, you know, it's an open question about the efficacy of CBD. And it's also an open question about the efficacy of CBD in the absence of THC. So there's a lot we do not know about cannabinoids and how they interact with our endocannabinoid system. So I just threw a lot of information out at you, but you can already, the answer to that question is you can already purchase CBD. It is not really regulated though. I'll put that out there. You could basically be buying like sugar water, like unless you're taking that to a lab or unless the person that you're buying the CBD from is providing you with lab stats telling you exactly what percentage CBD is in that product, you honestly have no idea.
Yeah, there's a study that they looked at various products on the market. It's part of the supplements industry if you buy CBD, and about 70% were mislabeled. They either had more or less than what they said was in it. But before you go pay $5 to get a few drops of CBD in your coffee, I would just point out that the amount of CBD is actually probably too low to actually have any type of effect mm-hmm. for the things that, you know, people believe this has an effect for. And so I would just probably advise that that's not really worth your money to do because you're only getting maybe like 25 milligrams and you need like something like 300 milligrams to have any kind of effect.
Yeah, so you actually might see if recreational becomes a reality in Illinois, you might see products though that have more CBD in it. So like the marketplace.
The THC, and it would be more regulated actually if you bought it from a dispensary where it would tell you what's in it. And so that is the benefit of going through a dispensary because they actually have to analyze and tell you exactly what's in it.
Exactly. The medical dispensaries or the medical cultivators in Illinois right now, they get like weekly check-ins from state regulators. All their products are like tested. It's crazy the amount of regulatory scrutiny that they are under. And I don't think that that's a bad thing either.
So on to our next question. I'm new to Illinois. I believe you mentioned marijuana has been decriminalized here. What does that mean? And how has that provided relief to convicted persons in Illinois? Lee, if you could revisit that one.
So the first answer to that means that if you are in possession of 10 grams or less of marijuana and you are stopped by a law enforcement officer, they should not arrest you. They should give you a citation instead. You should be paying a fine. You shouldn't be going to jail for that. The second answer to that question, which is asking about providing relief to convicted people, I don't think it really is, because this is dealing with this is sort of like a preventative measure on the front end of the criminal justice process. Whereas if you've already been convicted, you're on the back end and you're dealing with the fallout from your conviction. So that was one of my outstanding questions, which is what do we do with people who have already gone through the legal system? They've been convicted and now they have to live with this record.
And in your opinion, you believe that should be included in the legislation when it goes forth?
I'm just curious whether or not it will be, because the only state that has made an effort to pair criminal justice reforms with a legalization measure is California. And that was largely because there were activists at the local level who were saying, this is really important. We need to do something to address the disproportionate impact this has had on low income and communities of color. I haven't seen that in Illinois. I haven't seen that kind of activism on the ground. So unless you bring that to the attention of lawmakers in Springfield, who are largely white and affluent, I don't think they're going to make that necessarily a priority.
So we had a lot of questions about growing. So how can you legalize it and not allow the growth of it? For example, why can I have a food garden but not have a marijuana garden? So who would like to take that one?
Because it's illegal. I mean, you can do it. I mean, you're going to risk police coming in and you know, I mean, I don't know how likely that would be, but
does the 10 grams pertain to that as well?
No. 10 grams is just like you have 10 grams of like weed in a bag or something. And I don't even know if the 10 grams, I don't necessarily think it pertains to concentrates either. So if you're caught with concentrated marijuana in some form, I think you could potentially still, they could maybe make a case to arrest you for that. So that would not apply. But then again, if you're doing this in the privacy of your own home, a police officer would need a warrant to come into your house. It's not like they can just come in and search your house for no reason.
Yeah. And if I may, I would assume the short answer is that the state and or any government can't really get any money off of it if you are, in fact, growing it yourself. And there's no way to tax it. And that speaks to a revenue question.
Yes. Well, yeah, and there might be the ability to grow. We don't know how it'll shake out. So the last time this, when this was introduced last year by Senator Staines and Representative Cassidy in Springfield, their legislation allowed for a possession of up to 28 grams, and then you could own up to 5 cannabis plants in their legislation. So who knows if that will materialize?
Do other states let you grow? Do you know?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Are there any states that don't?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. Maybe there's like a good Googler in the room.
Our editorial team might be able to find that out for you.
I think this is an important thing to put out there. Like, we are reporters, so we're good at kind of finding information and talking to people, but we aren't experts on this, and part of the reason that we're not experts on this is that this is like a whole new world. We don't have like decades of reporting on marijuana to look back at. This is just we're all in this together in terms of information gaps is what I want to tell you.
So the next question is related to consent and sexual assault. Do you think marijuana affects people's ability to consent? If yes, then would you consider it to be a date rape drug? And what kinds of effects would that have in our state if in the terms of sexual violence, especially on college campuses such as our own here in town? I'm going to guess.
This is, I think, still very much an open question. I mean, any drug that can alter your mind can alter your ability to give consent. But I think there's still a lot that remains unknown. This is a question that I really do want to flag for follow-up. I think it's an excellent question for potential future reporting because, yeah, that's a great question. If it's a mind-altering drug, I don't actually know what qualifies as
a date rape drug or something that would fall into that category.
Well, I would say it's as much a date rape drug as alcohol is a date rape drug. And I would be interested to see, you know, where, like, is there any research that's comparing the two? Like, are more people reporting, you know, sexual assault under the influence of alcohol or under the influence of marijuana? Or, for some people, it might be a combination of the two.
So we did briefly touch on this idea that, yes, marijuana is addictive. Maybe perhaps you'd say habit forming. So the question is, if weed is habit forming, does the diversion of funds to recreational weed and away from more traditional uses of funds for food, medicine, and other domestic needs? Not really sure. I may have misunderstood that question. Sorry. Is weed habit forming? If so, does the diversion of funds to recreational weed and away from more traditional uses of funds for food, medicine, and other domestic needs, I assume, is that a problem? There might be
I'll just say there is such thing as marijuana, substance use disorder. It's a drug that people can and do get addicted to. So yes, it's an addictive drug, even if it's less addictive than other drugs out there.
So although there is a fear that the federal government would come in and shut down like a statewide legal marijuana shop, how often has that happened in states where it's legalized or things like that?
I could try to take a crack at this. I can't speak to the specific question about how often that has happened. I think, but certainly the damage has already been done when it comes to the friction between states that have legalized and the federal government's position that it should remain illegal. It's highly restrictive on the financing side and the banking side. It's not like you can put all the money you made from selling pot into a bank and then move that money across state lines. That has certainly hampered the industry. Makes it hard to operate just from a logistics standpoint. I think if marijuana were to become legalized here, the more interesting question is, like, who would police the black market and how aggressive would they be? Would you whose job is that? Is that going to remain local police? Are you going to create some state police unit that moderates sort of the black market? I mean, state police is not notoriously super well funded. How are you going to handle that? So, yeah, that's sort of where my head is at with that issue.
And I think it's also like a political question too. I mean, all of these states have representatives in Congress who can, you know, do, I think potentially they could pass federal legislation to legalize marijuana, not necessarily to tax it and regulate it, but to just legalize it. And then that would essentially solve that problem. So I wonder, as more and more states move towards legalization, or if more and more states continue to move towards legalization, then will those legislators be more inclined to craft and pass legislation that would legalize it on the federal level?
Has that happened? Has there
been
legislation?
Yes, Cory Booker has introduced legislation. I think Chuck Schumer has introduced legislation. I mean, right now it's not really...
Have those bills gone anywhere?
No. The answer is no.
Well, we were talking about how unpredictable the Trump administration has been, and certainly since the departure of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, notoriously not a big fan of drugs. And so, you know, the Trump administration, they do a lot of interesting stuff every day. Could that be a swing that he takes? I mean, aligning himself with Democrats in Congress, especially in the House, and pursuing that?
Anything's possible.
He's one to chase public opinion, so who knows?
Anything is certainly possible. I do want to back up just a moment because you made a passing reference to it, Ryan. How do you deal with money that you can't put in the bank? And I know that a couple of people came up and asked us about that over the break, and then we got a lot of text questions about that too. So, maybe kind of clarify what that means for those in the room that don't know, and then what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a lot of personal reporting on this exact topic, but because the drug remains illegal on a federal level, typical banking operations can transcend state lines, and so it makes the whole movement of money thing really hard. Essentially, if you're starting one of these businesses, you have to kind of start and restop your business every time you move, you're jumping into a new state. Companies can't go public in the same way. Like, you can go public in Canada now if you're a company in this business, but you can't go public on U.S. markets. So it's restrictive in that way.
And you're dealing in cash. Like, you can't go into, even in states where this is legalized, you can't go into a dispensary and use your credit card, for example. You have to, as far as I know, you
so
have
there's
to
safety
pay in
concerns
cash.
Because of
yes.
Yeah. Storage of massive
Extreme
amounts of
safety
cash.
Concerns because, like, they're dealing in a lot of cash every day, and it's, I think, it's probably a logistical nightmare, and something that I know those in the cannabis industry have been lobbying their Congress people to do something about.
You know what the cannabis industry is going to have a lot of as these states keep legalizing is money, right? So they're going to be able to dump more and more money from a lobbying perspective at swing state lawmakers in Congress. So maybe the issue will be resolved in 6 years.
So a lot of people have asked the following question, and I believe Christine might be able to answer it, but we'll see. How will big pharma companies be involved, if at all?
I actually do not know the answer to that question. I mean, but I know that at least for medical, some of the biggest opponents against expanding medical marijuana have been from the pharmaceutical lobby. So... but I don't actually know. That's a great question.
Well, and I think it's really important to note just again that these are great questions. We have over 100 that we're going through, and I think you have inspired the reporters on this panel and perhaps when we go back to the newsroom to follow up on some of these things. So keep watching, and Kristen will be talking about how you can follow that here in just a moment. So any questions that we can't answer here, hopefully we'd be able to answer in the future for you. And then we have one final question. I've read that President Nixon made cannabis a Schedule I drug to help incarcerated or at least those
with the right to vote. Some folks, people of color and hippies, to decrease the folks who might vote against him. I'm sorry, there's also like...
I think I know what they're trying to say.
Any comment? Yeah, I could try again, but if you think you know, go for
it. It's about Nixon's acceleration of the war on drugs. And I think, Alex, what's the guy's name? No, that's the guy in the 30s. It's someone in the Nixon said basically, yeah, they wanted to criminalize this so that they could lock up hippies and black people to, so basically people that did not support Nixon at the time. So yeah, the war on drugs is, journalists often stray away from the word racist, but I'm not, because it is it's a racist war, and it started that way, and it started that way right after the end of alcohol prohibition. Cannabis in some ways was sort of a scapegoat for alcohol, and there was this guy named Harry Anslinger, who's sort of the father of the war on drugs, and he began a pretty strong campaign to demonize cannabis, actually renaming it marijuana to associate it with African Americans and also Mexicans and also anyone that was not white, essentially. And there was all of these sort of like yellow journalism stories about white women being seduced by people of color because of marijuana, things like that. So it has always, I don't think I can stress that point enough. It has always disproportionately impacted people of color because the war on drugs was started to do that very thing.
So I hope you join me in thanking all of our panelists tonight for their awesome input.